It can be said that in October 1918, Ors was one of the most massacred villages as the Germans were retreating. The Sambre Canal was their last resource and their last foothold, so they fought fiercely and clung to the bridge and the lock as a drowning man would cling to his buoy not to founder. From October the 13th to October the 31st, there were dreadful battles in Ors, night and day. In his monography, Frother Trelka wrote, "At 8 o'clock in the morning of October the 14th, the general evacuation of the village started. 50 airplanes were flying over the village and the fight began. Around the station, along the railway line, it was like a hail of bullets, of slivers of rails and wood, of cube meters of dust or mud, of split or uprooted trees, of bricks, of stones hurled 200 meters away. The racket was unbelievable, and the people fled this way and that, towards Landrecy or Maroilles, in that hail which seemed to have been caused by an erupting volcano. Just imagine the state of the village when Wilfred Owen and his companions came upon it. On D-Day, instructions were given to Owen and his men. They were supposed to put up footbridges to cross the Sambre Canal and to attack the enemy, who was in a dominating position near the Lamotte farm and who was determined to stay there. As a matter of fact, Colonel Marshall had reconnoitred and warned his staff that the position was impregnable, but the plans hadn't been changed. Did Owen and his men know about that? Nobody knows. Be that as it may, all showed amazing courage when they faced the enemy. It is difficult to believe that such fierce battles took place on the Somme Canal, which is so quiet today, and along which you can find the GR 122 and the Camino. The Sambre-Oise Canal, which is 67 kilometers long, was dug in 1837, and in 1840 it linked La Fère to Landrecy and enabled boats to go from the Charleroi coalfields to the Paris region. At 4 o'clock on the morning of November the 4th, General Lambert's 32nd British Division had been placed in the village, starting from the Catillon side of it, at the place known as La Brique, to the Landrecy side at the place known as Apgarbe. On its right was the 1st Division facing Catillon, and on its left the 25th Division facing Landrecy. The 96th Brigade, which was meant to attack, was composed of the Lancashire Fusiliers 15th Battalion, placed in front of Apgarbe, the Lancashire Fusiliers 16th Battalion, placed in an orchard in front of the Vieux Rivage opposite La Motte, the Manchester's 2nd Battalion, placed along the Rue Huy. The interbrigade limit was along the Rue Verte Vallée. The 14th Brigade was composed of the Dorset's 1st Battalion, which was placed in the village opposite the Rue Verte. The brigades were helped by the 218th Company of Royal Engineers, who had made sections of floating flooring kept in position by 4 cork floats and weighing 130 kilos each. Rafts were built up with bundles of reed tied to openwork boards and covered with a waterproof sheet. 5 sections of floating flooring joined together end to end were needed to cross the canal. The ties were made of wire, and the whole construction was kept in position thanks to a steel cable which was strongly secured to the dikes on either side. At 5:45, the barrage bombing started on the eastern dike and moved forward for 270 metres in 30 minutes. Protected by a smoke screen issuing from the eastern dike, the leading companies rushed forward in the marshy land that was flooded at that time of the year, crossed the irrigation ditches to reach the top of the dike, and started firing to cover the engineers who were bringing the sections of floating flooring, hauling them up over the dike and pushing them into the water. But the assailants were halted by machine gun fire and mortar attacks. The hellish atmosphere was enhanced by the poison gas bombs of the German artillery, which was positioned on the heights of the Rue d'en Haut, du Moulin, du Chemin du Petit Versailles, on all the dominating positions of the village. Meanwhile, the English barrage was bombing a completely deserted ground 300 metres away. The gas, the smoke and the thick fog all mingled together. The engineers were working heroically. The Manchester 2nd Battalion was losing more and more men, and the covering fire was becoming insufficient. That is when 2nd Lieutenant James Kirk put up a submachine gun with four magazines on the raft, got within a 10-meter range of the enemy, and started firing. When he had no more munitions left, others were thrown up to him. Though his face and arm had been wounded, he kept firing. Sapper Archibald took advantage of the situation to finish building the footbridge, and other men followed his example, but they were soon hit or gassed. As Major Waters was leading two platoons across, the footbridge was completely destroyed by a bomb. Kirk, who had been hit a third time, was dead. So was Wilfred Owen. He was 25. A great poet had just died. Since the footbridge had been destroyed, the few Manchesters left caught up with the first Dorsets who had managed to cross the canal behind the lock. At 6 o'clock, the 16th Lancashire Fusiliers were darting towards the enemy who was positioned at the La Motte Farm. It was an elite unit the Crown Prince had equipped with a lot of machine guns and heavy trench mortar. Major Marshall was leading the 16th Lancashire over the dike without bothering about himself, and he was killed trying to cross the footbridge damaged by the bombing. The Manchester 2nd Battalion had reached its goal, the road to La Folie, at 12. The Germans, positioned at the La Motte Farm, had fought hand-to-hand fiercely. The machine gunners were chained up to their machine guns, and among the dead, two soldiers, a German one and a British one, were found stuck together. That is how the offensive on the Sambre-Oise Canal ended on that fateful November the 4th. Once you are on the embankment, walk towards the village of Vors on your right. When you get to the bridge, cross the canal and you will find the commemorative stele near the lock.